You're listening to allthingstrek.com, folks. I'm Bob.
And I'm Oren.
So,
yeah.
Star Trek Online.
Yeah.
The free-to-play, no, it's not free-to-play yet.
No, it's
free-to-play January 17th, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
The free-to-play build, though, is on the live server.
Okay.
And I gotta say, it's a huge step forward.
So I'm not gonna be ghettoized for playing free-to-play?
What do you mean?
Well, like, I mean, you know, the classic free-to-play model is the people who pay get, or like, not the classic, but a common critique of a free-to-play model is that the people who do the free-to-play get, you know, sent to the ghetto area of the game and don't get anything cool, and then the people who paid to play are, like, a million times better, and, you know, sometimes they don't even hang out in the same servers.
Well, here's the deal. Well, one, it's all one big server, kind of like Eve, so you don't have any sort of separation of, like, the free-to-play players versus the people who are still paying a monthly fee, which you still can. Now, everything, all the content is available to you in the game to play, if you want.
Right.
Right, and you can earn everything off of what's called the C-Store, which is, like, their cash shop, through in-game means. Now, the flip side of that is that if you wanted to just not spend a cent on the game, you're still going to be there, sitting there grinding for forever.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. Because how it was for us who've been playing the game since February 2010 is that we've been paying our monthly fee, and things were relatively easy to get. It was just really a matter of time of doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, then it came to the STS, which are like raids, where you'd have to earn emblems to go get the gear, which some of them, you know, as long as your group had its head about you, you're good to go. You can get it done and get that stuff in. It just took so bloody long to do. My goodness. Now it's changed to where STFs and raids are split up into, where there was four of them before.
Mm-hmm.
There's three Borg ones. There's one that deals with Species 8472, which really frankly hasn't gotten any love at all whatsoever because they just don't care about Species 8472 anymore. Well, I don't know why.
That kind of reflects the general attitude of Star Trek. They introduced Species 8472 and didn't really know what to do with it.
And then nothing happened.
Yeah, basically.
But the three Borg ones, at least, have been split up into two different sections where you have the space portion and the ground portion. You earn separate rewards for those. Each of them is...
Is there a way to skip the ground portion?
Yeah, you just don't even have to do it if you don't want to.
Yay!
I mean, you can just do the space ones over and over and over. Now, they have an hour cooldown still, so you can't just immediately go into it. Now, it's a massive improvement over the, I think it was 20-hour cooldown of the other ones originally, where you couldn't do it again that day at all. So if you went into it and didn't finish it, then you're just boned. You can't do it.
Okay.
Which was really, you know, which really sucked.
Problematic.
Yeah. Your reward for this now is supposed to be, instead of an emblem, you now get what's called dilithium. Now, we all know what dilithium is, right?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Crystals,
it's
right?
A crystal thing.
Right. So what you do is you collect this dilithium, then you refine it into refined dilithium, which you can actually spend and go get gear.
Okay.
Right. Now, the cap on this, though, or the whole kind of limiter, is that you can only refine up to 8,000 a day.
That sounds like a lot, but maybe not. I mean, 8,000 is a big number.
For the cost of things, it's not like a huge amount.
Okay.
Now, for those of us who have been subscribed already for a while and built up a whole bunch of emblems, what Cryptic did is they decided to convert all of your emblems, marks of exploration, I think marks of honor as well, like anything and everything that was kind of like a currency that you earned from doing various things, they turned it into dilithium for you. Now, the more you had, unfortunately, the less return you got on it.
Right.
Because on the Tribble test server, which Tribble is the name of this test server that we use, Holodeck is the live server, they had, it was, I think, 480 refined dilithium per emblem. And I was just flat.
All right.
And then they decided to put in this conversion formula because they didn't want the economy to be totally borked again. Because Star Trek Online economy was so silly before this, but now it's going to be this time-based currency where you can get up to 8,000 a day if you wanted to and spend it. Now, here's the ingenious part that I find that I think is actually really cool. Now, what you can do with this dilithium is you can actually sell it for C-Store points, which is what you use to buy stuff off the C-Store. This is how you don't have to spend any money. Now, keep in mind, it's still going to take a while for you to be able to build up enough points to get anything on the C-Store.
Now, are you selling this dilithium back to the game, or are you selling it to other players?
You're selling it to other players.
Okay, so it's like a Spiral Knights type setup.
Yeah, with like the energy and stuff.
Yeah, that's basically what Spiral Knights did, and I liked that. I liked that setup. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, so I think it's a really cool system. I'm not as worried now about the free-to-play transition that's going to occur now that I've like seen this system, how it's going to play out. I mean, it's going to definitely feel like a, you know, like Korean-inflated free-to-play MMO where you got to like play and like grind your dilithium and, you know, do it in order to get those rewards if you don't want to pay anything, you know. But thankfully, they still have the subscribe option, which you have a stipend that's rewarded to you of C-Store points every month. It's not like a huge amount. I think it's only like 480 C-Store points or something like that. that you get, which isn't enough to buy anything significant anyway.
Right.
You can buy some like lower tier stuff, like tier 2 ships or something like that, I think you can get with that, but those are kind of eh. Especially with the way leveling now works, which is way faster.
Okay.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, I'm a fan of faster leveling.
So, like, I hopped onto my Lieutenant Commander tune, which is about level 10 to 15 in right. there. Like, you go from levels 1 to 51, 51 being the max at Vice Admiral. So I'm Lieutenant Commander on this one tune. And I turned in, like, a mission, and suddenly I was, like, done with this level I was on, then halfway through the next one.
Oh, incidentally, when he says tune, he means character. I'd never heard that as a shorthand for character until I started talking to Bob, but apparently it's a thing.
It's actually a thing I picked up when I was playing World of Warcraft years ago.
Fair enough.
Is that I was like, oh yeah, my tune was doing this. I'm like, what's a tune? What are you talking about? And apparently it's short for cartoon, which is supposed to be your character.
Well, that makes sense. Cartoon. Your character is cartoon.
So that's where that comes from.
All right.
So anyway, I'm no longer as worried about the free-to-play transition. It's definitely become more of an MMO. It's still got the elements of Star Trek, but it's obviously just an MMO with a Star Trek skin still, I feel. You know,
yeah,
it's not...
Well.
It's what we got right now, though.
They're not going to pull a miracle out of their ass at this point.
Yeah,
they've got a game, and they've got to work with what they have.
Yeah, and as for your favorite ship, the Ambassador class,
yeah.
It's still in design discussions.
God, how can it still be in design discussions?
Really, what that means is, I think the guy's name is Heretic. He does all the ships and whatnot that go onto the Sea Star that you can buy.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy, I think, that actually makes all the ships, and he does it by himself. So really, he just hasn't gotten around to it yet.
Which
I can understand, especially with the way the game is designed and structured now to be... having the Sea Store as the main source of revenue, where a lot of the ships he makes are going on the Sea Store.
All right.
And there was just a huge release of a whole bunch of ships worth of Klingon on the Federation side recently. So,
But the Ambassador wasn't in there.
I'm sorry that I have my Excelsior, but the Ambassador isn't available yet for you.
My favorite ship. All right. Well, we'll see, Star Trek Online. When your Ambassador comes out, we'll see. But anyway, since... I feel we've spent enough time on Star Trek Online. It's time to talk about our actual topic for this week.
Bah.
And I know some people want us to talk more about Star Trek Online, which maybe we'll get to at some point in the future. But this week, we are talking about the last episode of each series. Because last week we talked about the first episode of each series, and, you know, we're all about symmetry here.
I love happy endings.
I do. I enjoy happy endings.
Not all of them are happy, though.
No, which is incidentally why we are not going to be talking about them in chronological order.
Thank God.
Or the order that they came out in, because I refuse to end this review, this episode, on a sad note.
Well, reviews. There's still reviews.
Kind of reviews. But I refuse to end another episode on a sad note, because last time we kind of did, and that kind of got me down. So this time we're going to talk about them in the order of what I consider to be worst to best. And Bob may have his own opinions, but, you know, no one here listens to Bob anyway. You're all listening to me, I know, right? Right? Come on. Okay. So.
It's true. If you go back and listen to a lot of you do a lot of the talking, and I just provide snarky comments.
Well, I did rewatch almost all of these episodes over the period of the last week, just, you know, so that I would know what was going on. And so, before we get into each specific episode, you think about what a last episode is supposed to do. And the important thing is that it has to provide closure. You have to see the last episode, and... With any luck, you will see the last episode and you will feel good about it, and you will leave the show feeling like it had a good run, and now you don't feel like you need to see more.
You're satisfied.
Yeah, you are satisfied with what you have seen. Ideally, it will also build excitement for a future series if there's going to be one. And of course, you also want it to be just a good episode in general, but those are two very specific things that a last episode has to do. So with that in mind, let's talk about Turnabout Intruder, which does neither of them, and is an awful episode in its own right.
Boo!
Yeah, so Turnabout Intruder is which we've talked about before on the show, but is the last episode of the original series. And the plot is that Kirk's, like, crazy ex-girlfriend takes over his body and tries to become a captain. And the entire episode is basically about how women can't be command officers. And they actually indicate that that's a Starfleet policy, that women can't be captains.
Which I was surprised to find out that Gene actually let this episode in at all.
Yeah.
Like, I know he wasn't very involved with season 3.
No, he wasn't. Although he is credited with developing the story. Now, he didn't write the teleplay, which means that he basically, being credited with the story means that you pitched a concept, and then someone else takes it and actually writes the episode. So who knows what Gene's original concept for this episode was.
Probably the ex-girlfriend crazy part is probably what Gene had in mind, I would guess. Because, I mean, you look at Star Trek, he wanted a pretty progressive thing on there, right?
Exactly.
You know, his... The cage, for crying out loud, woman first officer, right?
Right, and, like,
you know, alien guy on the bridge, and NBC was... NBC, right? Was NBC originally where the guys...
I thought it was Paramount.
Paramount was later, I think.
No, wasn't it UPN? at that point?
UPN wasn't a thing.
Didn't exist. Okay, I don't know what network it was.
I think it was NBC.
All right, that sounds right.
Either there was a network somewhere, someplace. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we talked about this last week. He pitched it, and, you know, they were like, no woman first officer, no alien guy on board, and they were just not even on board with that. So,
yeah.
My guess is that it was some guy that was hired. I don't know the writer's name.
The writer's name is Arthur H. Singer. That's the guy who did the teleplay, which is the script.
So whoever, like, the production guy at the time was for the show, or maybe the network had him as a writer or something like that, they shoved him onto this project and said, hey, we got this great thing for you to work on here. Hey, we need a really, really sexist central theme.
Yeah.
And this is what the story you got to work with. It's a golden opportunity for you.
Probably.
And that's where it went. Because I don't see Gene Roddenberry putting forward this kind of story at all.
Neither do I. I don't think that I have a hard time believing. I really don't want to believe that this was Gene Roddenberry's idea. But regardless of whose idea it was, what we end up having is an episode where Kirk's crazy ex-girlfriend is crazy all the time. And it's not just that she's crazy, because you can have a character, like a female character who's crazy and not have it be super sexist. But this episode is all about her feminine frailties. And how the fact that she's a woman is what stops her from impersonating Kirk while she's in his body.
Yep.
And like William Shatner does some really weird stuff in this episode where he's like acting like a lady, but which, I mean, he like shakes his hips around all the time and like files his nails in the middle of a briefing, which isn't really, that wasn't Shatner's idea, I bet. That was probably called for in the script, but It's just sort of really obvious stuff that makes it look like this is not Kirk. But beyond the...
That may be also a part of just 60s TV, where it was really big into the aesthetics portion of it. So they had to hammer home, like, you know, by the way, guys, Captain Kirk isn't actually Captain Kirk. There's a woman in there.
Right, but even... I talked to my mom about this episode, and she saw it when it first aired. And even in the 60s, this episode was bad. Like, like, you know, you can say, oh, it was the 60s, it was a different time. Well, but no. Like, even for the 60s...
Well, no, I'm not talking about, like, the sexist message or anything like that. I'm just talking specifically about the aesthetic acting portion of it.
Yeah.
It's for the audience to keep track of what's happening.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose, you know, I suppose the audience...
I still imagine people in the 60s would be like, yeah, this is a sexist episode.
Well, some things in television look a little weird until you look at them and realize that a lot of it is for the idea that people will tune in halfway through an episode and they still kind of need to know what's going on. That's why they had log entries at the end of each commercial break. Was like, wait, I already know all that. Why did you tell me? And it's like...
That's interesting. I actually had not thought about that.
It's a thing. I mean, and it feels kind of strange when you're watching them all in a row on Netflix. But you have to keep in mind the original format that they were made in. But despite just being a bad episode, Turnabout Intruder...
All bad things.
Turnabout Intruder also doesn't really feel like a last episode. It doesn't really conclude anything. There's no closure. Spock at one point has this weird speech that is like the closest thing where he like basically he like waxes nostalgic for a minute or so about all the things they've seen, and maybe it's possible that Kirk spontaneously became a woman.
I don't know what the timeline was for the series cancellation. Like, I don't know if it was halfway through season 3 they found out they were, or maybe in the middle of production of this episode they found out, or whatever it was, but...
I'm led to believe that they knew pretty much by at least the halfway point that they were not going to get another season. That's how I understand it. And maybe that's not true, but usually networks, like, won't just drop a bomb on you like that, and like, well, you're in the middle of filming your last episode.
By the way, guys.
I mean, like, even with Firefly, which is like the most notorious case of a network canceling a show for no reason, the people involved in Firefly knew by like the seventh episode.
It wasn't no reason, or at least their justification was different. This is going to be a bit of a side tangent. The reason that they canceled it was that they weren't drawing in the audience that they wanted to have.
Well, yeah.
Right, and that all came down to the advertising space they were selling. Like, they were targeting at young male audiences what they wanted, like, exclusively, specifically. And that's the ads that they ran. Now, fortunately, there wasn't a whole lot of response to the advertising portion of it. But lots of people were tuning into the show still. Just, it wasn't just that particular demographic, it was a different demographic.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was led to believe that it wasn't getting a lot of viewership because it was in a bad time slot.
No, it wasn't getting the viewership they wanted, was what it was.
Huh.
And they had sold all this advertising space that wasn't popular. The advertising space itself wasn't popular because it wasn't selling those products wherever it was.
Interesting. I didn't know that. All right, well, that puts a different spin on it. I mean, it's still stupid, but...
Oh, believe me, I totally agree. It is totally stupid.
All right, but movie...
But we got a really cool movie out of it.
Yeah, we did. Okay, maybe we'll have a special episode where I talk about Firefly. But right now, back to Turnabout Intruder. They must have known by the end of at least the last couple episodes of filming that they were not going to get another season. And the thing about it is that it's not like they were in the middle of a big story arc. Like, there are a lot of shows that have really cobbled together rushed endings because they were in the middle of some kind of story arc.
Rome is a fantastic example of that.
Yeah, Rome, Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. The second season is really rushed because they were, like, trying to shove everything into their last few episodes. But Star Trek doesn't have the original series doesn't have a continuing story. So it wasn't like they had to rush to finish anything. They could have very easily sat down, turned Turnabout Intruder, and the one that came directly before it, which was, All Our Yesterdays, that's the one. And they could have turned those into a two-parter, or heck, they don't even necessarily need a two-parter, but they could have made Turnabout Intruder with the idea that it was going to be the last show and that it had to bring some closure to the series. But they just didn't. And, like, you're left at the end of season three wondering what's, like, okay, well, that was kind of a weird episode, but what's next? And there isn't anything. And you're like, what? Wait, what? That was the end? And then, of course, nowadays we have the luxury of being able to go directly into the movies, which sort of actually tie up the series fairly nicely in Star Trek VI.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're watching this when it first came out, you'd have to wait, like, I think, like, 8 years before the first movie. Maybe even longer. I forget when.
10, because it ended in 69, right?
Yeah, I forget when Star Trek Motion Picture came out.
Motion Picture came out in 79.
Okay, yeah, so 10 years. Oh, boy. That's not a good...
That was all in direct response to Star Wars, actually. Because Star Wars released, and Paramount's like, what do we got that we can put out there to compete?
Yeah, they were like, wait, suddenly a sci-fi...
We have a thing called Star Trek.
It's like a sci-fi franchise is actually, like, profitable. What?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, Star Wars, that's part of the reason why I find the whole idea of Star Wars versus Star Trek rivalry to be, like, really silly. Because, you know, Star Wars depends on Star Trek for a lot of its technology. Like, they don't have to explain all the technology in Star Wars because Star Trek has already explained it.
Did you see the Star Wars versus Star Trek on Crack.com?
I did. That's a lot of... That was pretty funny.
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, they have a little...
Times 1,000!
Star Trek is...
For those that aren't familiar with it, Crack.com is... Oh, how would you describe Crack.com?
It's a humorous, humorous, like, you know, article site. They publish a lot of funny, like, lists and just weird articles. And, you know, it's very, they like to highlight, like, strange places, pieces of history. And then they also do, like, weird Photoshop stuff.
Yep.
And in this case, they had this awesome, like, diagram. And it was like Star Trek equals, Star Wars equals Star Trek times 100. And so it was like, you know, in Star Trek, all the admirals are corrupt. And times 100, in Star Wars, Grand Moff Tarkin is going to blow up Alderaan.
It's pretty fantastic. For those that haven't seen it, head over to crack.com and check it out. Shameless plug.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, we're plugging crack.com. That's funny. Okay. But anyway, so that's pretty much all I have to say about Turnabout Intruder. I just wish that they had, you know, put a little more effort into it, and that I wish that Gene Roddenberry had been more involved.
Was part of it perhaps just trying to churn out as many episodes as possible to get to that rerun limit?
It's possible. I mean, the last few
episodes...
episodes...
what their thinking on it was, or if that was even a goal or intention for them to get to the points where they can just have enough episodes and have reruns happen, but...
Well, the last few episodes of TOS are very strange. Like, there's, you know, before Turnabout Intruder, there was All Our Yesterdays, which is this episode about Kirk and Spock in an ice cave with a lady, like, having weird flashbacks.
That was a time travel one, if I remember right.
It was. And then the one before that was, hold on a second... I wrote this episode name down. It was The Savage Curtain, which is the one where...
Yes, Abe Lincoln!
Yeah, which is the one where they have to fight, like, evil guys alongside Abe Lincoln. You know, which, as premises go, I've heard worse, but it is a very strange episode. So,
it is the best.
Yeah, and season three definitely feels like they weren't... Like, even though season three has my favorite TOS episode in it of all time, which is the Enterprise incident, I still think that they were really unfocused in season three. They had lost a lot of their drive.
Well, Gene's not there at the helm so much anymore.
Yeah.
Right? And they're, you know, floundering about, because presumably the assumption we're going on anyway is at least that they have some idea that at the end of season three they're not going to have anything anymore, right?
So, yeah. Well, like, Gene Roddenberry...
They're turning out episodes, I think, to get to that point to where they can just have it syndicated in reruns.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. All right, so moving on from that one to the next one, which is the last episode of Enterprise. These are the voyages. And this episode...
Can I go in the other room and pull teeth
while you're doing this? You're not going to leave me alone for this one, Matt. Okay. So, this was actually very tough for me to decide which episode I thought was worse, Turnabout Intruder or These Are the Voyages. I eventually went with Turnabout Intruder just because it's so offensive to me, but These Are the Voyages is pretty far behind, because in addition to being the last episode of Enterprise, it was also effectively the last episode of Star Trek. And it is just...
It is, actually, currently date the last episode of Star Trek.
Episode of Star Trek. And it's depressing.
Yeah, it is.
Like nothing happens. I mean, it's... Like, it's, you know, it's like, it's their last, you know, adventure before the ship's about to be decommissioned, and the adventure they go on is, like, really inconsequential and feels like they should have been able to resolve it very easily.
What was the original mission that they were doing, anyway?
They were on their way back to Earth,
to decommission the ship.
Yeah, the recap of the show is that they were, of the episode is that they're on their way back to Earth, so Archer can give his speech at the signing of the Federation Accords, and so they can decommission the ship.
Right.
And while they're there, Shran shows up. And that's when we find out that apparently there's a 6-year time gap between this episode and the previous one, which is weird, because no one looks different, but whatever. Shran shows up, and apparently they all thought he was dead because of some stuff that happened in the 6-year period, and he needs their help to get his daughter back from some thugs. And, like, you know, it's like, really? The flagship of the Earth fleet is going to go fight some thugs. That's their last episode. That's their big thing. But then, of course, the reveal is that this is all a simulation being watched by Riker.
Yep. During Pegasus, yeah, during season 7.
During the Pegasus episode of The Next Generation. And it's just, it is like a double take moment. Because it's like, first of all, Jonathan Frakes, I love Jonathan Frakes, but he and Marie Sirtis, who are both in the episode, they both just look way too old.
Well, they let themselves go.
There's, I mean...
Not saying I'm in peak physical health, but they, you know, were definitely not in any shape where they looked in, you know, TNG.
Well, they just, I mean, I'm not going to criticize them for the way they look, other than the fact that they look older, and they are. They're like, what, like 17 years older by that point? Like, a long time.
94 to 2004.
Okay, so it's only 10 years then.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're 10 years older, you know, and they look 10 years older. They do not look like they did at the end of season 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really weird disconnect. And, like, it's very hard to believe that this is actually happening during Pegasus. And especially because, like, the whole idea is that Riker is watching this simulation as a way to figure out what he should do in his, like, you know, in his dilemma between his former commander, who is now an admiral, and his loyalty to Picard. But nothing in the simulation deals with that. And it's like, he watches it, and at the end he's like, I know what I'm going to do because I watched this scenario. And it's like, but all that happened in the scenario is that they saved a kid and then Trip died.
Yep.
Like, what? How did you arrive at a conclusion from that? And, you know, it would have made so much more sense if they really were really intent on going with this whole simulation angle, is if the simulation had been going on in the future part of All Good Things. Because that way, Riker looking older would actually have worked with the plot. And there's actually, you know, then it would have been a question of... I feel like the mission that they watched might, you know, it maybe would have been a little bit more relevant to what was going on in All Good Things. Because the whole episode of, the whole point of the Enterprise part of These Other Voyages is that Tucker and the captain, and Tucker and Archer have this really good friendship, the strong bond between, you know, a captain and even a not officially first officer, kind of first officer.
Yep.
And that's kind of what was on the line in All Good Things with in the future with Picard and Riker. But in Pegasus, that's not the issue. In Pegasus, it's an issue of divided loyalties, but Trip doesn't have anything dividing his loyalties in These Are the Voyages. He's just loyal to the captain, whatever, they're good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, oh my god, watching it. And then, of course, you know, Marie Sirtis is there for basically no reason. She doesn't really do anything. And then they have this one shot of, like, actual footage from the episode Pegasus.
It's
actual footage. They actually...
No, that's a 3D image, is what that's... It's computer-generated, all that.
No. There's this one section where they actually splice in some footage from Pegasus. It's like a 3-second shot of 10 forward. And it's obvious because it looks so different from the rest of the 10 forward.
It's an interior shot.
Yeah, it's an interior shot.
Okay.
It's an interior shot of 10 forward, and it looks so different from the new footage that they're using of 10 forward, because obviously they're not using the same set.
Well, yeah, because it's not there
anymore. Yeah, it doesn't exist, and they use different lighting levels, and it's like, guys, why did you do that? Why did you put in this piece of footage just to highlight how different your new set looks? It's even more jarring, if possible. And of course, like, you know, but because of this whole, like, 6-year time gap, it's really hard for me to identify with any of the characters in Enterprise, because I don't know, like, I don't know how any of them have changed, or if they're supposed to be different, and, like, oh my god, it was just huge.
No catharsis for those characters.
Yeah, no catharsis, it's a huge mess. Like, the only part of the episode that's even remotely good is the part where Trip dies. And even then, he dies for basically no reason. It's like, you know, the thugs got on the ship somehow, and it's like, how did they get on the ship? Like, a minute ago they were outside in their ship shooting at yours, and now they're in the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow they got on the ship, and it's like, did they use a transporter? If they had a transporter, you think
they docked, is what they did. They docked? They got, like, the port side, like, docking coupler or something like that.
How did they do that? They were fighting a minute. What, how?
Remember, no shields, hull plating.
No shields, hull plating offline.
Hull plating is offline.
Why are there not a million dudes with guns there if they knew they were docking? I don't know. But, so, anyway, Trip dying is, like, is the only remotely good part of the episode, because at least he gets, like, a cool, like, little thing, you know, he gets to die in a kind of cool way, but again, it's not really accomplishing anything. And then it's even more bizarre when, like, Archer goes down and is trying to talk to him as he's, like, dying in sickbay. And if you actually look, Archer is actually getting in the doctor's way as the doctor's trying to put Trip in the tube thing.
Yeah.
And Archer delays it by several seconds because he's like, I need to talk to my friend. Don't put him in the tube. and it's like, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that he would have lived if they'd gotten him in the tube a few seconds earlier, but it couldn't have hurt. And then
has Jim ever recounted to you that his CPR story at all, about how he got his CPR certification?
No,
our friend Jim, he used to work at Boys and Girls Club, and to work there you need a CPR certification. So he was in this class, and the instructor asks a question. So here's what you do for CPR. You put your hands together, you lock in, then you do chest compressions, you may break ribs. Now, what he does is he looks up the class and he says, yes, is this a bad thing? And people are like, yes. He's like, no, there's nothing worse than dead. Who cares about broken ribs? You can't get worse than dead.
That's a fair point. You do have to break the ribs for CPR sometimes, especially if they're, like, old or have fragile bones. And the thing about this episode that's even weirder is that, like, after an entire season of not letting Rick Berman and Brendan Braga near the show, they suddenly let them write the final episode. And I guess
Berman's not even in charge of the thing anymore.
But
right?
Maybe that was in their contract. Maybe they, like, had it in their contract that they had to be able to write the last episode. But for some reason,
maybe
Rick Berman and Brendan Braga write the last episode, which is, you know, season four had actually been picking up and been getting better under Manny Coto and a couple of the other guys. And it's just like, why would you let these two clowns write it? You took it away from them because you saw how awful it was, and now you're going to give them the last episode.
Maybe it was all a plot. I mean, this is going to be entirely rumor that I'm going to put forward here.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, supposedly, maybe it's Paramount, maybe it's CBS now, I'm not sure. The license is split up, I think. But they're waiting on doing a new series until, like, Rick Berman's contract had expired.
Huh.
Is what they were doing. So maybe it was all a plot to have a really bad ending season of Enterprise, so then when the next thing came along, it'd be like, oh my gosh, this is 10 times better. Because, I mean, the ending of Enterprise, if you just make the end of Enterprise so bad, the next thing comes along, it'd be better. It's like this thing that your girlfriend's mom had put forward, right? Mm-hmm. She had watched Lex before watching the Enterprise.
Right, yeah, contrast.
So if I watch really, really bad sci-fi, the next sci-fi will be good in comparison.
That's possible, I suppose, but I think that they probably realized they were shooting themselves in the foot because, like, now they've just tarnished the Star Trek name, and now people will associate, anyone who actually watched the last episode of Enterprise will think, oh, another Star Trek series? I remember what happened the last time I watched Star Trek.
Speaking of future Star Trek stuff, so Star Trek 2, we know, is coming.
Oh,
right.
You mean Star Trek the Star Trek 2?
Yeah, Star Trek the Star Trek 2, with Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Carl Urban, you know, the new one, all that stuff. That's more pure entertainment than it is actually, you know, telling us, you know, about cool, different, like, social problems or whatever it is that Star Trek likes to do.
It's not topical is what it is.
So RoboCop has been cast.
You mean the guy who played RoboCop?
The guy who played RoboCop.
Okay.
But the title of the article was RoboCop in Star Trek 2. I'm like, whoa.
If I saw that article, I would assume it was about Data as a cop.
Oh, man.
Which I think maybe I'm going to have to write, like, a Data Riker buddy cop fan fiction now.
Yeah, I don't remember the actor's name, but he's been cast in the new Star Trek movie. Probably as the villain.
Probably. I mean, I don't know what else he would be doing. But, all right, well, that's interesting. I mean, I am looking forward to the next movie, and I'm also looking forward to see if a new series shows up out of David Forrest and his company. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
And, all right, so there's one more thing. The last thing about These Are the Voyages that really brings the whole thing down, like, even further, is that the actors themselves feel tired. Like, Frakes and Marie Siritz do, as does everyone in the original cast. I'm not in the original, excuse me, the Enterprise cast. They all feel, the energy level in this episode is really low. With the exception of Jeffrey
Combs. Because they're all going to be out of a job.
Yeah, with the exception of Jeffrey Combs, who is always awesome, and doesn't matter what he's in. He's like the ray of sunshine in this episode.
That's because he knows how to bring it every time.
Yeah, he does. He delivers. But everyone else just is feeling really low, and you can't not feel that way when you're watching this entire episode. And then it ends, and you're so sad, and like, this is it. There's no more Star Trek after this. This is the last gasp of a once great franchise. And I actually cried a little bit when I had to rewatch this, because I was so fucking sad.
Because you were thinking about that.
Of the greater context. And it was, and it, like, at first, and you know, you might think maybe that was the point, but no. See, if the episode had been good and had a sad ending, I would have walked away feeling, like, cathartic, and I would have been like, oh man, that was sad, but I feel better after watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt bad. I had to, like, go and eat some cookies and, like, you know, play some video games after I watched that. Alright, so anyway, moving on to the next bit, which was Endgame, which was written by four different people, goddammit. Kenneth Biller, Robert Dougherty, Rick Berman, and Brandon Braga. I don't know why you would ever let Kenneth Biller near a script, but anyway. So
contracts. They're trying to make this episode bad so that when you went on to watch Enterprise, it would be good.
All right. So just for reference, don't ever watch These Other Voyages and Endgame back to back, because you'll get whiplash, because they are bad in completely the wrong directions. Like, you know, in all good things, nothing happens. In Endgame, way too much happens. Too much things are happening. And it's like, okay, so for recap for anyone who hasn't seen the episode recently, the plot is it starts off in the future, Voyager's gotten home, it's like 10, it's been like 23...
It took 23 years for them to get home.
23 years in the Delta Quadrant, and it's 10 years after that. Everyone's old, except Kate Mulgrew, who apparently put on a white wig and... It looks exactly the same otherwise. But
yeah.
Everyone else is old. And then, like, the plot is that Janeway is going back in time to try to make it so that...
Janeway.
Yeah, old Janeway is going back in time to try to Voyager to make them go back home earlier. At the end of Season 7, effectively. It's nearly the half point of the episode before they are done with their whole future town. And, like... You know, to be sure, the future is... Some of that stuff is important. Like, it is cool to see how the various characters ended up. But then we have this really long sequence where Janeway steals a time travel device from some Klingons. And it's like, why is this here? What purpose does this sequence serve? And the answer is it serves no sequence. And she talks about the guy she's stealing the time travel device from. Is this Klingon named Korath. And, like, everything else we've seen in the future until this point has been some kind of callback to something from the series. And they talk about Korath like he's someone we should know. Like he's some kind of old friend of Janeway's. He's not. He's not from the series. He's actually... And then this is kind of funny. If you actually look up Korath, you will find out that he is from the Star Trek experience. Bob, did you ever go on that?
I never went on it. I wanted to, but then you got, like, shut down.
Right.
And stuff.
Well, the Star Trek experience, the plot of the Star Trek experience, if you can call it that, is that a Klingon guy named Korath comes back in time to kill Picard. Or to kill Picard's ancestor, which is, like, one of you guys on...
But he went too far?
No, no, he to kill Picard's ancestor, which is supposed to be one of you guys on the ride.
What did this guy serve the House of Duras or something?
I don't know.
What did Picard do to this guy that made it so
wrong? I don't remember
the
justification. I just know that that's where Korath comes from.
All right.
And it's, like, the weirdest plug I have ever seen for... And it's, like, not for continuity's sake. It's just confusing. But anyway, that entire sequence serves no purpose. And then Janeway goes back into the past... And, like, it's like, hey, past Janeway, you should do what I say, because I'm future Janeway. And she has this, and it's like, she tries to get them to go through a Borg transwarp conduit that she didn't tell them about, like, and past Janeway is like, hey, what are you not telling us? And the whole plot is just really pressed for time, because they have to rush through all of these scenes. And it's like... It's a constant of Voyager that Janeway loves to argue with herself. Whenever there are two Janeways in the room, they will always fight. And it's really hard for me to believe that past Janeway didn't see this coming, that future Janeway didn't see this coming.
I don't know. I don't really think she likes to argue with herself so much, because, I mean, this episode, and then what was the previous one where they had passed through some sort of nebula? There was a source of some sort, and there were two Voyagers?
Yeah, there was the two Voyagers coexisting, and then the
I mean, most of the conversations were like, blah, 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 blah. Then the two talk, and then be like, you know what I'm going to do, don't you? I'm like, yeah.
No, they were arguing in that scene, too. They were arguing over who was going to sacrifice themselves.
Yeah, but the resolution was always like, you know what I'm going to do, right? It's like, yeah, I know what you're going to do. You can't dissuade me from it. I know.
Okay, well, that maybe even with that, it's weird that future...
I mean, that's exactly how this resolved as well. When
no, that's not how it resolves. What happens in this
episode... She flew away in the shuttle.
No. What happens in this episode is that future Janeway comes back, doesn't tell past Janeway about the Borg, like, transwarp hub, and is like, go in that. And past Janeway is like, why didn't you tell me this was a Borg transwarp hub? And they have a big argument over it. And it's like, how did future Janeway not see that coming? How did future Janeway not know that deceiving her past self was going to lead to this problem? And then, of course, they have this big argument.
Well, the reason she was doing it is because she didn't want Janeway to try to, which they do, end up coming up with some crazy idea to try to destroy the Borg, or at least part of this transwarp hub.
Right. It just seems like, I mean, honestly, at this point, a better plan
Future Janeway didn't want that to be a thing for them to do, because it puts the ship at further risk.
Yeah, but see, future Janeway had to have known that just not telling past Janeway about this was not going to work. And, like, at this point, the best way for her plan to succeed would actually have been for her to just try to replace past Janeway. You know? Get her hair dyed, you know, show up at a point in the timeline when she knows past Janeway is alone, and just stun her, and put her in a closet for a few hours. But, like, instead they have this, big debate over whether or not they're going to blow up the Borg, you know, hub, and they're going to blow it up. But then future Janeway tells past Janeway that 7 of 9 is going to die, and suddenly that changes everything.
It does change everything. It's 7 of 9. You can't let the kids on the show die.
And it's like the whole thing comes off as future Janeway, like willing to put like billions of people's lives in danger, and possibly like the whole galaxy in danger to save her friends. As like Janeway like destroys civilizations to save her friends in this story, and it is just so weird. And
she has no qualms about that anyway. We know that.
Yeah, but it's like right? it's just not. It's one of the few times you see it so blatantly, and it just makes you wonder what's going on with her. And then of course they have this hilarious moment where they're like, "Hey guys, this is Voyager. We have to have an option C," and they literally that's how they say it. Like past Janeway and future Janeway are having coffee. And they're like, and I think past Janeway says, isn't there some way we can have our cake and eat it too? And future Janeway is like, well, yeah, there kind of is, but I wasn't really going to do it, but now I will. And so they decide that what they're going to do is, because the Borg are super vulnerable to anything involving a virus, they're going to like get, they set it up so future Janeway gets assimilated by the Borg, and she has a virus that infects the Borg. And this last few scenes are really, really rushed. Because they spent so much time in the future, so much time with past Janeway and future Janeway arguing, that when they actually get to the Borg sequences, they don't have a lot of time.
Nope.
And so it's like everything, the whole like blowing up the hub sequence is really rushed. And then the Queen gets infected with this virus from future Janeway. And I'm really unclear as to if the implication is that they just blew up the Borg, they just wiped them out, just sort of like on a whim, or if they didn't. Because if they didn't, then what that means is that the Borg have assimilated all of future Janeway's super tech, including her Batmobile armor, which is like this upgrade that she puts on Voyager that literally just makes armor plating appear out of nowhere. And it looks really stupid, and it's really hard for me to believe that they were able to install it in like a day.
Makes it look like a candy bar.
Yeah, it does, kind of.
chocolate Voyager.
Yeah, I would. Oh boy, chocolate Voyager. And like they have this even weirder sequence where like Voyager is... flying, or like Voyager is flying through the transwarp corridor and a sphere is chasing it. Good thought, Bob. Our computer is about to get unplugged. But, and like, you know, Voyager is chasing, it's being chased by a sphere, and then it like comes out on the other side, and suddenly Voyager is like inside the sphere, and the sphere explodes, and Voyager was inside it.
I don't know what the plan was on that in particular. It's like, alright, so guys, here's the plan. We're gonna get inside this transwarp, we're gonna head towards Earth, but what's gonna happen later is that there's gonna be a sphere. It's gonna swallow us. Like, where did that part of the plan come from?
Especially since because of future Janeway, they have torpedoes that can blow up spheres in one shot.
Yep, so and
like,
cubes.
Why, yeah, so it was like, why didn't they
shoot...
Well,
cubes took two, I guess.
But... Well, some of the cubes took two. Sometimes they don't roll well on their damage roll. But, like, you know, why didn't they just shoot the cube, the sphere with torpedoes? Like, that was what they ended up doing, but for some reason they did it from inside the sphere, and it was just this big, fake-out so that we could think, oh man, maybe they didn't make it. And it was really stupid. And we did get to see Earth being, because of the transport corridor, like, lets out at Earth, and of course we got to see that Earth was guarded by a whopping 9 ships.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is better than sometimes when it has no ships.
Yeah, that too.
But, like, it's even stranger because, like, it's not explained to us when these transwarp hubs were created and, like, if they always existed or if they're new.
Because it's, like, a light year away from Earth, right?
No, it's not even a light year. It is right in orbit of Earth.
Is it?
It's, like, in Earth's solar system. And so, like... They must be new, because otherwise the Borg could have just sent a cube right to Earth and not bothered flying through Federation territory.
Not just one, a bunch.
Yeah, a whole bunch of cubes. So it must be new, but like they don't actually explain any of that. They're just like, they have these things, guys, and they let out right at Earth, and it's like, well, that's convenient. And then, of course, like...
They put defense platforms, have a, you know, Earth defense armada at all times, mm-hmm. You know. I'm not, you know, no operational expert, mind you, but, you know, that's probably a thing I'd put there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... It's a real mess, and then, like, they end it, and we never get to see any of the resolution of them actually getting back to Earth, because the episode is over too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And
which always kind of bothered me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always said that I wanted them to get back a season early, and have a season...
Which is a cool, this is a cool idea, I like that, yeah. Of them spending that, you know, year on Earth, and seeing how they, you know, acclimatize now.
Right, I think that would have been cool, but, like, regardless, this whole episode is just, it's just too crowded with stuff. And nothing in it makes sense, and then they maybe destroyed the Borg, which is, I guess was sort of like they were thinking, well, in TNG and All Good Things, they saved humanity from a horrible time vortex. In Deep Space Nine, they won the biggest war the Federation has ever had. What can we do that's going to be cooler than that?
Yeah.
We could blow up the Borg. Okay, but instead of having that be the central focus of the episode, they just, you know, just did it, like as an afterthought. They blew up the Borg. And is like, you know, and then the other question is like, okay, so Voyager is full of these future upgrades. Is like Starfleet going to use those future upgrades, or are they just going to throw them out because temporal prime directive?
Remember the book I loaned you, Star Trek: Needs of the Many?
Yeah,
I think it's in there. Actually, they talk about a Section 31 agent actually going and like sabotaging all that nonsense.
That is how I said Section 31 would do.
I'm just saying.
It sounds like the opposite of what Section 31 would
this
do.
This sounds like you need to read the book. I think it was in there. I had seen it. It's been a while since I've read that book, but I think it was in there. They're talking about, yeah, all of a sudden this tech was gone. It's not, like, there anymore. It's like, okay.
Okay.
All right.
I like the idea.
But you can get armored Intrepid class in Star Trek Online.
I kind of like the idea of one Section 31 agent, like, prying off the Batmobile plates off of Voyager one at a time. Bonk. Just with a crowbar just going, like, okay, and, like, throwing it into a shuttlecraft, a space wheelbarrow. Okay, this is sounding like a better and better story. I'm going to write that story. Alright, so, in terms of how this fares as a last episode, it's okay. They do finally get home. They've resolved at least
the main plot of the series is resolved, yeah, with them getting home. Anyway.
They resolved the main plot of the series. They finally resolved... They resolved Seven of Nine and Chakotay's bizarre romance that they had going. Yeah, I mean, they resolved it in that they get together. You know, B'Elanna had her baby, sure. So, like... Voyager doesn't have a whole... Oh, and Neelix wasn't on the ship anymore. He'd already left by then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was like, okay, this kind of works. They did get home. If you were watching the show hoping for them to get home, your wish is granted.
Yep.
And they did have their big final showdown with the Borg. It's too bad that wasn't more of the episode. You know, it's at least passable, I think. It's got some really stupid stuff going on, but... You know, I mean, if you watch Enterprise first, and then you watch Voyager, you're like, oh my god, this is so much better.
Uh-huh.
Because it's just, you know, it doesn't leave you feeling super depressed afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so, next up, we have the last episode of Deep Space Nine, What You Leave Behind.
Yep.
Written by Ira Stephen Baer and some guy named Hans Beimler.
I love me, Ira.
I don't know anything about Hans Beimler, but I do love Ira Stephen Baer. That guy's awesome.
Yep.
And also directed by Alan Croker, who also directed Endgames and These Are the Voyages, which is interesting. Yeah. I know, right? The weird thing to put in your contract. I directed the last episode of all three Star Trek series. And so, you know, this episode is pretty good, and it is Deep Space Nine, so that kind of, you know, is what I would expect.
Maybe because he had been through DS9 at that point, he saw how good things could be, and then he had Voyager, and it's just like, yeah, this isn't as good. Then he got to Enterprise and just said, no, all bets are off.
Like, no, there's nothing I can do with, I can't do anything with a schlock. But, like, you know, the what you leave behind is the resolution of the Dominion War, and the whole Prophets storyline. And the best parts, I think, are easily the parts on Cardassia with Kira and Garak and Damar and their little resistance thing that they got going. I really love those sequences. It's really sad when Mila, Garak's old housekeeper, dies. And then, like, you know, when they storm the Dominion headquarters and they're all shouting, "For Cardassia!" It's like, yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. And then Damar gets, like, killed in what I think might possibly be one of the best death scenes of a main character, in that he doesn't, like, you know, he just gets shot and, like, you know, he gets shot doing something cool, but he doesn't have some kind of, like, really reality-bending, like, super long soliloquy. He just gets shot, and he, like, tries to say something, and then he dies.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then they're like, yeah, we're gonna fight on his name, and it's, like, you know, and it's heroic, but it's not heroic in a way that's stupid.
Yep.
And it's just, you know, it's really cool in general. We get to see Garak being a badass. We have this really funny moment where they're all camped outside Dominion headquarters and they can't get the door open. And they're just like, you know, they're just like laughing hysterically because of the situation and how bad it is. And then, you know, the Dominion helpfully open the door to execute some Cardassian prisoners. And
yep.
then they run on it. Which is, you know, poor Dominion. If they hadn't decided to execute that guy, they would have been okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, the space battles are pretty cool and, like, they do have to...
Love seeing me the Excelsior flying through space firing phasers.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
They do reuse a lot of footage, which is a little annoying. And there are a couple of flies in the ointment. Like, for some reason, they never invite the Romulan commander to their conference calls.
Yeah, that's always something that bothered me when I was watching, like, any episode that had any of the military action going on where the Romulans were involved.
Yeah, never it's involved. Like, it's like, we got the Federation Admiral.
I think it was only once I saw the Romulans involved in any sort of planning actively, and it was at Deep Space Nine, like the mm-hmm. war room or something like that.
Yeah.
And really, it was just like Martok and Worf arguing with the Romulans.
Yeah, and there was that one...
With the Federation guys going, calm down.
Yeah, there was that one Romulan lady who was kind of Kira's friend. I was sad that she wasn't in more episodes. But, like, you know, you've got the conference call where you have Admiral Ross and you have the High Chancellor of the Klingon Empire, and then you have Sisko for some reason, and not a Romulan guy.
Nope.
It's like the Romulans have no say in this strategy. They just get to hang out.
Well, Sisko was in charge of planning the entire invasion of Cardassia, right?
Was he?
I think so.
I mean, he was in charge of retaking the station. I don't remember if he was actually the one who drafted the plan for let's attack Cardassia. It wasn't really a very complicated plan. It was like, we're going to take all of our stuff, and we're going to fly over there, and we're going to beat them up.
Well, that's because Sisko doesn't mess around.
You know, we're all in.
This is the same guy who's poisoning Maquis planets with quantum torpedoes, with,
yep.
you know, plague warheads or whatever.
Yeah, well, we had...
And he, like, doesn't screw around. He wants results, and he wants them now.
And the funny thing about it is that, like, if you think about the Cardassian Union as, like, a galactic power, they must have the weirdest-looking map, because, like, the Cardassia itself is, like, practically on the border with Bajor and the Federation, but they have all these other planets that must be, like, in the other direction.
Yeah.
So it's like playing Civ, where you put down your capital city, and then you
expand in one direction.
Yeah, and then you realize that someone else has put down their capital city, like, you know, just a couple hexes away, so you can only expand in one direction.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is kind of a funny thing. And then there was something else that was kind of bothering me about the battle sequences. I can't remember what it was.
Lack of ambassador classes?
Well, yeah, there was that. but by then they'd filled out the ranks a little bit with some Akiras and some centaur classes, I think they are. But they had more
than Excelsior Miranda, quote unquote, variant.
They had more than just the ambassador. They had more than just the Galaxy, the Miranda, and the Excelsior. They'd added some more ships.
There was the Steamrunner in there.
I think I saw a Sovereign at one point, but I'm not positive about that because I know they were kind of hesitant to use the Sovereign because it's a movie franchise.
Well, the first thing that we had seen of the Sovereign was 2371, 72.
I guess.
I mean, it was like a really new starship at that point.
Mm-hmm. So, like,
you whereas, know, I mean, if you watch the DS9 like Dominion War arc, they are suffering from manpower shortages, resource shortages, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard for them to just crank out ships, right? Their shipyards are like in shambles and stuff, right?
Right.
So for them to put all the resources towards building like Sovereign class starships, they have all these Miranda and Excelsior sitting around they can put back into service.
And then it's, well, okay, I remember the thing that bothered me. It was that. their reason for let's attack Cardassia now instead of, you know, keep the Dominion bottled up there is that they are concerned that the Dominion will use this opportunity to rebuild their ships. And it's like, guys, I don't care how good the Dominion is at building ships. There's no way that they can match ship production of three galactic powers with one planet. There's no way. They cannot do that. And the sad thing is that they had a perfectly legitimate reason, because the Dominion at that point was wiping out the Cardassian civilian population because it was rising up against them. And so they could have just said, we can't let this go on, we have to attack now. And they could have had the Cardassian, like, commander, like, get on the conference call and be like, we're attacking now because they're murdering our people.
What Cardassian commander?
Well, no, because at that point, I forgot to mention, one of the coolest parts in the episode is when the Cardassians switch sides.
Right.
And I really love that part. So I imagine there must have been someone in charge.
I think that was more of a mob mentality thing is what was occurring there, because they had heard, you know, on the comms or so, like, oh man, they're killing all our people back at home. This sucks. Hey, what do you think about, like, turning around and shooting the Jem'Hadar in the back? I think that's kind of more how that went down, because the overall in-command Cardassian has always been, like, the Legate, which I don't know if that's, like, their prime minister or whatever it is in their society.
Well, Legate is a very... There's more than one Legate. Legate is just a rank. But
well, there was one Legate who was, like, you know, in command, and you know first it was Dekat, he went crazy, and there's Damar, who, you know, then became the resistance guy, and then there was, you know, Mr. Yes Man, who gets murdered as well.
He was the head of the government, and I don't agree that the whole thing happened just piecemeal, because it was all very sudden. It wasn't like, you know, you never saw Cardassian ships shooting at each other. So there wasn't any, like, half of the Cardassian ship switching sides and the other half not. So it seemed to me like it was very clearly that the orders were given by somebody. And it would make sense to me that there would be a guy in charge of the battle, because you can't, like, you know, they can't possibly just be running every battle from their headquarters. Like, you know, they're providing support from their headquarters, but there has to be a field commander, someone who's in charge in the field. And I imagine that guy must have given the order to turn around and start firing when he heard the news that the planet was being wiped out, or that their city was destroyed, what have you. So that guy could have come on the conference call and been like, "We're attacking now because if we don't, they're going to wipe out all of our peoples, all of our dudes, and we can't have."
So yeah, we're being genocided right now. Is it cool if we join your team?
can we stop that, please? But other than that, it's a really cool series of sequences. Everything works great. The episode starts to go into epilogue mode, and then all of a sudden, everything stops, and it's like, oh crap, we still have a Pawraith story to resolve.
Oh wait, there's more plot.
And it's really weird, because, like, the timing on the Pawraith story is very strange, because, like, it seems like the whole thing is supposed to be happening concurrently, and we know that, like, when they first start their, like, when Dukat and Wynn first start their hike into the Fire Caves, we know that Sisko hasn't won the battle at Cardassia yet.
Yeah, he's still there.
Like, we know that he at least is still there. He may not even have left yet. Mm-hmm. And we know it takes several days to get to Cardassia, even at high warp, and then several days to get back. And so it's like, what were they
not
doing?
Not like Earth to Kronos, mind you.
No. And it's like, what were they doing during this time period when Sisko was fighting at Cardassia and then flying back from Cardassia? Did it take them that long to hike to the Fire Caves? I mean, so there's that weirdness. But even if you assume that whole thing sequence happened, like, just as Sisko was getting back, the story still feels like an afterthought. And, like, because, you know, Sisko goes down on his own to fight Dekat, and it's like, well, the last time the Prophets and the Pawraiths had a square off, they gave Kira superpowers.
They did.
But this time they don't. They just send Sisko down. And, like, Sisko gets really lucky, and Dekat gets distracted. And it's like, so, alright, so either the Prophets knew how this was all going to turn out, which, if they did that, then that seems silly. That takes away all the tension. It's like, well, okay, this has all been predetermined by the Prophets, so they're just gonna, you know,
well, part of that
matters.
Is that we don't care about the Prophets, you know, character journey. We care about Sisko's character journey.
But, and
I think those stories can work. It depends on perspective, though, because I don't really give a damn what the Prophets' perspective is on it. Right?
Yeah, well, that's true. But what I wish...
You know, I'm interested in seeing what happens to Sisko, you know, mostly because, one, I do exist in a linear
I really wish that they had found a way to work in the Pawraith sequences with the Cardassian invasion. Like, maybe if they had had some way of making the whole Pawraith freeing thing happen on Cardassia. Like, maybe the idea... Because the Pawraith seem to feed off of negative energy. So maybe the idea being that, like, you know, Dukat is going to perform this some kind of thing in the middle of this horrible genocide that's going to power up the Pawraiths and give them Because, you know, the other question with this story is like, okay, so they're going to let the Pares out of their prison, but like, the Prophets already put the Pares in that prison. What makes the Pares think they could win a second round? Like, they already lost this fight.
They've learned from their mistakes in the past. They've had millennia to think about it.
I guess. But it's like, you know, and so that whole story really feels like an afterthought, and it is really rushed, and I just wish they'd found some way of integrating it more into the main plot. But other than that, that's the big flaw with the episode, I think.
Speaking of Prophets and Pares and all that good stuff. Well, not so much Pares, but more like Prophets. But Star Trek Online side tangent, we have a new featured episode series coming out, which are kind of like episodes for Star Trek Online. You play them like once a week and they come out and they're supposed to be telling an overarching story.
All right.
The next one that's coming out, which is supposed to be in February on the second year anniversary of Star Trek Online, is actually going to be about the Jem'Hadar fleet that was just like whooshed out of existence in the wormhole.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah,
and
so
apparently the Prophets, instead of sending
The Prophets did instead was, instead of just like wiping them out, they just kind of held them in time stasis for a while and threw them forward in time to make them our problem. Well, 30 years later,
shunted them into the future.
Yeah,
that kind of reminds me of putting off my chores. It's like, it's like, you know, I don't want to deal with this now. I'll deal with this next week. And then when next week rolls around, I'm like, God damn it! Why didn't I do this in the past? Then I wouldn't have to do this now.
I won't have to do this now. So yeah, it's going to be kind of exciting, I think, to see that kind of be a thing to happen.
Well,
I mean, kind of the lead up to all this right now is what they're doing is they're actually having the Jem'Hadar attack like bug ships appear all over the sector. At least in lore, they are, and you can actually buy them off the Sea Store and use them as like an escort class type ship where you can fly around. They're not very powerful. I mean, they get kind of blown up really easy, from what I understand. I don't have one personally because I don't really care. I have my Excelsior to fly around, and that can kill a Sovereign at 30 paces.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's actually pretty cool. I'm glad that actually sounds like a neat plot that they're doing. I like that idea.
Yeah.
All right. So, but looking at what you leave behind from the perspective of the last episode, it does a pretty good job. Especially like if you're able to get past the whole Prophets thing, even though it is a little weird when Sisko goes to Cassidy and is like, "I will be back. Wait for me." But Sisko doesn't know when he's going to get back, or if he's ever coming back. He tells Cassidy that, even though the Prophets kind of indicate he's not going to, because they're like, "The Sisko has finished his task." Okay, well, why don't you send him back right now? I don't know.
What does he need to do? I don't understand. If he's done with what he's doing, then what was...
Like,
what
I thought the implication was that he was supposed to be dead, but then he's telling Cassidy he's going to be back, and it's really just like, well, what if you come back, like, in 70 years, and, like, Cassidy is, like, you know, either dead or super old and has never moved on with her life because you told her to wait for you? Like, God, that sounds terrible.
Sisko comes back, Cassidy's all crusty.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, just... But ignoring that, if you're able to move past that part, the rest of it works pretty well, especially the...
The last, like, 5-10 minutes of it was really good, where we're seeing, you know, it's kind of life is going to continue on.
Yeah, like, you know, the party sequence, the everyone's going off to their own assignments sequence, the Odo going to, like, go live with the Great Link and cure them, and Kira standing on a rock. You know, that was
singular rock on the entire surface of that, the Founder's planet.
Which I at first thought was also a Founder. But then, because it wasn't because it wasn't all flaky. It wasn't all like infected by the disease. It was just a rock.
That's a good point.
So it was actually just a rock.
Okay. but the only rock, mind you.
Yep, the only rock. And then like so, you know, that all worked out pretty well and made me think, man, this was good. Also, there's never going to be a DS9 movie, which is probably good. Because, you know, they went...
Yeah, there are some people who say, "Hey, I'd love to have a DS9 movie," and I have to think like, what would it be about?
Well, you'd have
what
to spend,
would it be
like,
about that wouldn't be either a hashing over of a previous plot we've seen in DS9 or a completely new one that would undo a lot of the nice, neat plot tie-offs that we saw already in the last episode?
Yeah, you'd have to like spend like the first 40 minutes getting the gang back together.
Yeah.
And that's like a really bad way to start a movie.
I mean, if you need more DS9, go read some of the novels.
I don't know if I'll recommend that, but if you need more DS9, go watch it again.
I'm talking about the ones where you've got Captain Ezri. I'm talking about ones that are, like, during the series run.
Okay.
Some of them are actually pretty good. I mean, they're, like, self-contained stories. Some of them are, you know, like, arcing storylines and whatnot, but they're still pretty good if you need more DS9.
Yeah, that's fair. Alright, that makes sense. Alright, so, I give this one a pretty good score. It's not as good as some other episodes of Deep Space Nine. I think that some of the lead-up to it is a little bit better than the actual episode. But, you know, overall, it's a good way to end the series, and, you know, it made me excited to watch what was next, which, of course, was Voyager, as we already talked about. Biggest letdown ever.
Ever.
But all right, so now that we've just about hit the hour mark, we're going to move on to our last episode, which is All Good Things.
Yes.
Which, you know, I feel like I barely even need to talk about it because it basically speaks for itself. This is like the ultimate, like, just not even in Star Trek, but just in terms of television shows, I think All Good Things stands out as one of the best ways to end a series.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's got, like, this really epic character arc for Picard, who is, you know, the main character of TNG. Let's not kid ourselves about that. And it's got Q, who shows up in his, like, best role as, like, a mentor to Picard and humanity. And they somehow managed to...
You destroyed humanity.
And they, I love that one. Yeah. They somehow managed to link it up with Encounter at Farpoint in a way that is cool. And I loathe Encounter at Farpoint. I really do. But they somehow managed to link up All Good Things. And, oh, speaking of All Good Things, one more point I do have to give to Where You've Gone Before from Deep Space Nine. That's the only last episode of Star Trek, other than the original series, that isn't trying to rip off All Good Things, to some extent.
I mean, What You Leave Behind?
No, I mean, What You Leave
Behind...
The
name of the episode.
Yeah, the episode is not trying to rip off All Good Things.
Right.
Whereas both the Voyager ending and the Enterprise ending are both trying to rip off All Good Things, to an extent. But anyway, back to All Good Things. And then, you know, you've got this really interesting time-shifting element of Picard. And even if you don't like time travel, it's not real time travel, so you don't have to get mad by it. It's you know...
It's true. I'm not really a fan of time travel stories myself. Yeah. But at least it's done in a way to where, like, Q's involved with it, which, right. I mean, Q's freaking omnipotent. Yeah. He can do what he wants.
And it's like brain time travel. And we get to see the potential, like... We get to see the potential, like, sort of bleak storyline of what happens to the characters... And then we get to say, no, that doesn't happen because they fix it. And it's not going to happen like that. And, you know, they resolve the whole, like, Riker-Worf animosity that they had going in Season 7 over Troy, which is kind of a weird romance, in my opinion, Worf-Troy, but whatever. You know, they pay it some mind. They resolve it. Worf's a player. Yeah, Worf is a bit of a player.
I haven't really ever thought about it until now, but Worf's kind of a player.
And, you know, and then this was written by... Ronald Moore and Brannon Braga. And Brannon Braga is actually not bad at weird, like, mind twist episodes like this one. And Ronald Moore, of course, provides really good dialogue. And so they actually work very well together in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they give us, like, you know, the stakes are high. It's like, you know, this horrible time vortex gonna wipe out humanity. And, like, they have this awesome... I really, really love the paradox moment where Picard figures out the paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Through his, like, you know, space Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Which is something that kind of weirds me out, is I'm like, why don't you just call it Alzheimer's, guys? I mean, I know that Alzheimer's does more than just make you lose your memory. I know that's kind of a misconception that people have, but clearly this is supposed to be Alzheimer's.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why you would insist on calling it Iramatis syndrome.
Because it's space, alien, Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's.
But, you know, it's just really good because it brings closure to a series. They end it with this friendly game of... poker of some kind. I don't really know what kind of poker they're playing on TNG, but whatever. They end it on...
Well, they do several different kinds. I mean, the one that they're specifically playing at that point is five-card stud, is what they're doing.
Really? Is that what they were playing? Because it looked to me...
That's what Picard had them playing.
Okay, because isn't, like... Because like,
Data was having them play five-card draw.
Okay.
Is what they're doing.
Well, we'll talk about Star Trek poker on another episode. But like,
well, it's just regular poker.
okay, fine. No, okay. We're going to do a brief tangent for Star Trek Poker. The weird thing about Star Trek Poker is that they very often have this variant where each player has one card in the hole, and then every other part of their hand is showing. But it's not like Texas Hold'em where there are two cards in the hole, and then there are five cards on the on the field that everyone makes a hand out of.
There's typically two kinds of poker, which is there's five cards and then there's seven cards.
Right.
Sometimes they're playing five cards, sometimes they play seven cards.
But the variant that they're doing is it's each player has their own hand, but only one of their hand is face down. Every other part of their hand is face up. And that variant of poker is not real. Like, I looked it up on some poker discussion sites, and they have no idea what kind of poker they're supposed to be playing. And it's a really stupid kind of poker because on average four or five players, and what that means is that by the end of a round of betting, like, at the end, when everyone has their five or seven cards, most of the deck is face up. So it's really easy to guess what everyone's cards are, if you're even remotely good at figuring out the odds of card playing. Because mm-hmm. you can just look and see, all right, well, there's three jacks showing, and there's, like, four aces on the field already, so
you
I know...
You remember Time Zero? That's why Data is poker champion.
Because he plays stupid poker. But anyway, yeah. So anyway, but that aside, you know, them ending with the card game works really well, and, like, Picard joining in on the card game for effectively the first time. The other time he joined in on the card game was when he was actually an alien, which is kind of funny when you think about it that way. But, like, and then, you know, and then, of course, just looking at it from an episode perspective, not even as a last episode, they have really good construction. The scene where all three Enterprises are flying into the time vortex to collapse it is really cool. And, like, watching them explode one by one is like, no, the Enterprise, it blew up! Oh, God, it blew up again! Oh, my goodness!
I was actually kind of worried when I was first watching this episode. I mean, I was 7 years old at the time, right? Uh-huh. Because I really liked the Enterprise. When I first saw the... It's called the Galaxy X's, or the actual technical class, or whatever.
Yeah, the one with the phaser lance.
Yeah, which kill a Negvar 30 paces.
Mm-hmm.
Watching it, I thought it looked so stupid and dumb. And then when that was the last Enterprise left, I was like, no, they can't have that Enterprise. It looks so stupid. And I like child raged about it.
See, I didn't watch that episode until I was like in my teens, and I didn't have that same problem. But and you know, this episode also had Tasha Yar in it, which I love because it shows Tasha Yar what she could have been if she wasn't being written so stupid in the first season. And, you know, it's just great, like, from every perspective. And there's not quite as much to say on it as the others because it doesn't have, like, all these flaws for me to nitpick. And in general, I really like it. And
directed by David Carson, who also directed Star Trek Generations.
Really?
Yep.
I looked it up and said it was directed by Winrich Kobel. That's what Wikipedia told me. Is Wikipedia lying?
Well, Wikipedia is not cited as, you know, like a reliable source.
Yeah, but this seems like a pretty easy thing to correct. You figure someone would have fixed this by now. Huh, I'll look that up. Okay. It was directed by a nebulous, mysterious figure.
Some guy. Somewhere.
But I just really wish that All Good Things could be the last episode of Star Trek instead of These Are the Voyages. Because, like, you know, then it would have been cool, and we would have had, like, a really awesome, like, send-off for Star Trek, and we would be excited for the next show instead of just, like, praying that
well,
it won't suck.
I'm sure if the last episode of Star Trek was All Good Things, it wouldn't actually have been the last episode. We would have had another series.
But I mean, you know, right now,
We're now 7 going on 8 years without Trek.
Well, like the first thing, like nowadays, whenever anyone sees an episode, when anyone sees an article about Star Trek about there possibly being a new series, the first thing I always think is, man, I hope it doesn't suck. It's not like, oh man, I'm so excited. It's, oh, I hope it's not bad.
Yeah.
And that's sad. That's sad, especially for one of my for my cultural treasures. But All Good Things gets A++++ from me. Bob, do you agree?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Do you agree with the list I put these in?
Yes, I do.
With Turnabout Intruder at the bottom, All Good Things at
the top. Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well then, just to give you a preview for next week, we are going to be discussing the Mirror Universe.
Ooh.
And we're actually going to have our friend Jim on the show that we talk about so much because he's a really big fan of the Mirror Universe. And,
yeah,
you know,
he is.
He will talk to you about it.
Mostly because I think he likes Midriff to Paul.
Maybe. He hasn't actually seen that episode yet.
I mean, Jillian Blalock is a good looking woman.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, we'll talk about that and more next week. Thanks for listening in.